AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Takes over fake debates. And we are live. SB Talks Sports Show, where Real Takes Over Fake Debates. It is Monday. Happy Martin Luther King Day, everybody. Everybody, shout out to you, Sushan. What's going on, brother? Happy MLK Day.
Doing good, SB. Happy MLK Day to everyone out there. Hope you all had a great holiday.
It's cold in Chicago right now. It is cold.
Yeah, it's cold a lot of places. Colder than probably expected. But
oh no, hold on. I'm gonna tell you right. I'm gonna tell you the exact weather right now. It is. Oh, grandma, phone to show you real quick, shot right here. It is a chilling. I don't know what I'll say. This a chilling. It is a chilly 7 degrees.
Oh, okay. All right.
And it says it feels like zero tomorrow, yeah. But it really actually, no, it's -2 right now. I changed it. Tomorrow is going to be -7, and it's going to be, it's going to feel like it's -17 degrees tomorrow here in Chicago. So, school's going to be canceled. Hopefully, if not, my girls are not going to school. I'm probably not going to leave the house unless I truly have to.
Right.
So, yeah. It ain't that it's cold out here, Sean.
Yeah.
What's the weather down there looking? What's the weather look like over there for you right now?
It was about 41 earlier today. So yeah.
That's a hot 41 for me right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got a lot to talk about today's show. Shout out Tiff. Tiff, I know today is gonna be a long day for you. It has been a long day yesterday for you and your Baltimore Ravens. We definitely gonna have to talk about it. I was like, maybe even if Tiff got time, I just want to hear Tiff, what was her reaction? I might have to drop the link. Just ask Tiff, what was your reaction to that drop of a pass that would happen with Mark Andrews in that Baltimore Ravens game? But we got breaking news that came in earlier today. The Chicago Bears have got their new head coach. Breaking news that dropped earlier. The Bears have got their man and head coach Ben Johnson, former offensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions. Sean, what do you think about this move and how do you grade it?
I think it's a very solid move for the Bears. Obviously, Ben Johnson's been a hot head coach candidate for the last couple of years. Yes. Essentially decided not to actively pursue jobs last season. I think he was waiting for right opportunity, but also he was someone who wanted to be paid at the highest of levels for head coaches, and first year head coaches don't usually get that. The reports are he's getting about $13 million a year from the Bears, which puts them right up there with some of the highest paid coaches in the NFL.
What was the commander trying to offer him last year? Maybe he turned out a commander's job, which is look at we laughed about it, but look at it crazy now. They actually better than what they thought. But
well, again, I think there were some other things there that I think probably caused him to turn down the commander's opportunity. Certainly, I think again, hindsight being 2020, taking the Chicago job or the commander's job would have probably done well for him, yes, given you know, having young quarterbacks, young talented quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. But I want to be very careful because I think it's important to remember that when a guy gets hired as a head coach, it can't just be about one position.
Yep.
This has to, this is, you know, we've seen his innovativeness as an offensive coordinator and play caller, albeit a couple of those calls the other night were a little questionable. But that's it. But that doesn't necessarily define who he is as a play caller, I think, and as an offensive, you know, coordinator and offensive guru, so to speak. This has to be about his ability to, you know, build a culture for 53 men and for 53 players. And certainly, again, everybody's going to look at the Bears offense and, you know, say, hey, you know, he's probably going to do some things that that offense, which, again, isn't all that crazy to think. But that said, you know, this is about, you know, him building a culture for the Bears. And from the Bears' perspective, one of the best ways to weaken a division rival is to take one of their main cogs from them.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's one of their main cogs, was one of their main cogs in Detroit as the offensive coordinator. But Detroit was ready for this. They knew that they were going to lose both of their coordinators more than likely this coach hiring season. So, again, solid hire. Not going to give it a grade because, again, he could be the next Kevin O'Connell or he could be the next Josh McDaniels. We don't know.
We don't know. Yeah, that's true.
You know, so let's wait and see. But curious your thoughts on this one.
Oh, I like the move because the offensive struggles of what the team had last year. So if I had to grade it because of the weapons that they have, I'd definitely give it an A. A minus. I'm going to say A minus. Depends on who he gets as his coordinator because he definitely got to get like a hard-nosed, tough, gritty defender. You got to get somebody that like a defensive heavy because he already came out and said, and he said this on multiple occasions, that he loves play calling. And he's going to probably call plays as the head coach. So, and as I tell you, he ain't calling the plays on the defensive side of the ball. He probably just going to call plays on the offense. So I'm really going to keep an eye on who he picks for his defensive coordinator. I think that is going to make or break this core. But I want to see what he's going to be able to do. Now, I know you have been saying, even though I think the Bears are at 10, I think that high and how bad that line was, you should go line. But you have been throwing in the air that the Bears should go get Ginty. I think if you go get Ginty and you keep Swift, it's probably not going to be as potent as Gibbs and Montgomery, but you'll have like a mini version of that too because I can see him going to go get another back. And I think the Bears need another electric guy. And like I said, Ginty would be right up on that list if you got to probably go get a guy like that. But I like the move. I can't wait to see what he could do with the offense, especially with Caleb Williams, because I still got high praise for Caleb, even though I know everybody riding the Jaden Daniels train right now, even though Jaden Daniels is balling. But I can't wait to see what he do with Caleb Williams, because with Caleb Williams had all that bad stuff go on with this team this year, bad coaching, bad offensive line, and he still looked pretty good, honestly. He still looked solid.
Yeah, and I'll say this really quickly, SB, just to put a cap on this point. I think this really came down to three teams, Vegas, Jacksonville, and Chicago. We know Chicago, of all the jobs available, was the best job available.
Yes.
When you look at just roster construction, cap space, again, you know, it's the division is going to be tough, obviously. That's, you know, where some people thought that he may not want to necessarily jump in the division, that he may want to leave the division because of the toughness of the division. But it shows, obviously, for $13 million a year, he didn't care. So, you know, I think, so certainly, you know, they got one of the coveted coaching candidates, but there's still more work to be done. As you mentioned, SB, that offensive line needs some work. I would guess that they would probably spend some assets on that during the offseason, whether in free agency or the draft. But again, I think also, you know, he's a first-year head coach. He's going to go – this is going to be a process for him too, because it's not just about him calling plays. It's about him managing the game and making in-game decisions that sometimes win or lose games because that's the part of the head coach's job. And again, I'll restate what I said earlier. This is not – this cannot purely be about Caleb Williams. This has to be about his ability to establish and build a culture of consistency and winning in Chicago.
Yep. Need to write on here. Since we're on topic, I was saving it after, but I want to ask, since we're talking about Ben Johnson, we're talking about the Lions, I have a bone to pick with Detroit Lions fans. So, obviously, the Lions lost this 2 years in a row losing. The Lions lost. The Lion fan reaction that has been going on is getting on my nerves, because now the Lions fans are over Dan Campbell and Jared Goff. Hold on. I want to go back and look before Dan Campbell was here real quick. Listen, Detroit's best seasons. Let's check out these wins, right? Dan Campbell came in, 2021, right?
Yes.
2021. So far. Because y'all think y'all stuff don't stay. Y'all just started winning, Detroit Lions fans. Y'all literally just got good. And y'all better thank the GM who has been running this team and established this team together from the Stafford thing. From that point on, they've been established a good team. But before Dan Campbell got here, 5, 3, 6, 9, 9, 9, 7, 11, 7, 4, 10. So you only won 2 double-digit seasons since 2011. Since 2010. Dan Campbell already got 2 of those,
which I believe were under Jim Caldwell.
Yes, and yeah. this what blows me. Like, y'all just started winning. Legitimately just started winning. Detroit has been a laughing stock of a team my whole life. This has been the team where they have star players and they waste their talent. Barry Sanders wasted his talent. Megatron wasted his talent. Matthew Stafford, who went over to the Rams, won championship, wasted his talent. So don't do that. Please, please be humble. And y'all should be appreciative of what y'all got, because y'all have not been in the conference finals since 1990. I wasn't a laugh. This man took y'all to a conference finals already. And then y'all not even going to acknowledge the fact that literally the defense was destroyed. And he still led y'all, with all the injuries, he still led the team to 15 wins. What is we talking about? Y'all better be appreciative, because I swear y'all a push for Dan Campbell to be gone. And that team will run through a brick wall for him. Dan Campbell be gone, y'all won't be the same team again. Y'all better go back and look at them old Detroit coaches. Go back to them Patricia days. Like you said, the Caldwell days. Go back there and look and tell me y'all want to go back that way. Please don't do it. But, Sean, I think the Lions fans are overreacting. And I 1,000% say Lions fans are ungrateful to flip on Dan Campbell after he really turned his team around. Because he should be nowhere near no point on no hot seat. I think how good he got this team, he at least got another 4 years of before we even question firing him. Unless they just literally come like a lottery team next year. But what's your thoughts on Lions fans flipping on Dan Campbell? I don't like
it. I mean, it's the reactive nature of things didn't go as you thought they were going to go. Obviously, many people picked Detroit to win the other night because they were at home, because they were number one seed, because they felt Washington was playing with house money. But again, let's not lose our minds. The reality of the situation is, again, you mentioned SB, that was a team decimated by injuries, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you don't want to play the what-if game, but you have to believe that if, they're not as injured on the defensive side of the ball, that maybe the outcome of the game is differently or goes differently. But I do think, to be very frank, and we said this Friday night, and I know we're going to talk about this game probably a little more in depth. The biggest problem with the game was the offense did not do a good job of protecting the defense.
Yep.
And again, I know their idea was we want to score. But you, part of game management is when your defense is as decimated as it is figure out a way, how do we keep our defense on the sideline as much as possible? You know, so when they are on the field, they're fresh and they're able to, you know, come in and play at peak level in spite of the injuries. And I didn't think they did a good job of that the other night. That said, if Dan Campbell becomes available, Dan Campbell's going to get a job right after he becomes available. That's how good he's been in Detroit, particularly after that first year. But, you know, let the emotions come down. Again, disappointing. You didn't get, you know, back to where you, you know, thought you were going to get. Thought definitely going to get to the NFC Championship game. You didn't. It happens. Mm-hmm. You go in the offseason, you evaluate, you figure out first how you can start keeping guys healthy if possible. But I think the big thing is you got a good coach. You got a good front office. You got a good team. Don't lose your minds over one game. It's one game. You know,
it's one game, literally. At this point, we could get into this game anyway, because you got to talk about the games anyway. We could get into it. First of all, and they still almost won. The game was fairly close. And then the Commanders just really took off at the end. It was 45-31. Jake Daniels had a masterclass of a game. 22 for 31, 299 yards, two TDs. Robinson Jr. had 15 carries, 77 yards, two touchdowns. Jared Goff went 23 for 40, 313 yards, one TD, 30 interceptions. And I think I brought that up, too, about when we talk about this game. That, like, I kind of really knew Jared Goff will need to be throwing the ball 40, 50 times a game, and that's a recipe for disaster for this team. I believe I did say that last show, and obviously they did the same thing, because I said this young Commanders team, you don't want to get in a shootout with them because they are explosive and they have the chance to do it. And then you also brought up the point that, like you said, you got to protect your defense because you don't have everybody on the defense. Aiden Hutchinson, gone. Robinson got broke his arm. Man. Like, he's gone. You got lost people on the line. You lost linebackers. Like, it's everybody was hurt on that defense. So it's like, it wouldn't make no sense for you to be airing that ball out like that much. I would be trying to run the ball, dominate the clock. Who had the dominate time possession? Commanders did. And they did their thing. I just want to say shout out to Jake Daniels, though, and the Commanders offensive coordinator Kingsbury, because the they had Detroit defense in a blender. Even injuries or not, they had that defense in the blender. They could not stop them. Kingsbury was in his bag with those triple options, those deep passes. They was doing everything right. They couldn't do nothing wrong. It was a masterclass performance. But I want to know, what was your reaction to this game, Sean, and how you looking at it?
Certainly was a surprise. Again, when we did our picks Friday, did pick Detroit to win. That said, you know, Washington came out and played really well. They're playing with house money right now. And when you're playing with house money, it's hard to pick against a team playing with house money. But they are. And I think, you know, you give credit to that organization top to bottom. And one of the things that, you know, has come out is, you know, Magic Johnson and Josh Harris, Magic Johnson being in the ownership group, Josh Harris being the managing partner, he said the other day, he said, listen, you know, we are a group that has brought in the right people, and we believe we brought in the right people, and we let them do their jobs, you know. So they're not trying to tell Adam Peters, the GM, what to do. They're not trying to tell Dan Quinn what to do. They're not telling Kiff Kingsbury what kind of offense to run. You know, they brought in the right people, and so they have really changed the culture of that organization, and you know, and really in a short time, by bringing in the right people, but also bringing in the right people and getting the freak out the way. And I think that's the part that needs to be talked about more.
Yes.
Is, you know, having, you know, ownership who don't meddle and who don't overly get involved in the nuts and the bolts, so to speak. And so I think that's where, you know, they have to be credited. And again, did anybody pick Washington to make the playoffs this year? If you did, you're probably lying.
No. You know,
if you say you did, you probably lie. You know, and certainly we did not pick them to be in the NFC Championship game, even to start the playoffs. You know, so
not on my bingo card. I can tell you that one.
You know, so you know, so and I think the other part that needs to be talked about, SP, they're gonna have $100 million in cap space this offseason.
I will buff up that defense crazy. We finna make the most unstoppable force defense, and how our offense is running right now, I just build up everything on the defense. And obviously, you know, make the line better, because the line ain't all that either. But I'm that's all I'm doing. And maybe you could, like you said, I know you're talking about, I know you brought the T. Higgins. Maybe go for a receiver, but the receiver be last on my list. I'm literally buffing that defense up, buffing that lineup, and then we just whatever money, whatever else money we got left over, then I go get a receiver. But besides that,
Well, no, I'm saying that receiver in particular because I think he would be a great complement to what they have. And to get a big target like that who is gets down the field, and we know what, we don't have to go into what T. Higgins is. While you have Jaden Daniels on a rookie deal, that's the type of moves that you make. I think, again, you're right. They should invest in their defense, and I'm sure they will. And honestly, I think they could make some investments on their offensive line. But if you got a chance to get T. Higgins, you know, with a Jaden Daniels, I think I would absolutely be, you know, trying to make that move.
I have forgot to add this one to the list too, but we got to talk about this game. But only one particular thing that we really, 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 really need to talk about. And the NFL has to change this rule because this one dude that I see twice a year is the main person taking advantage of this. The Chiefs' dark magic got to stop. The Chiefs beat the Texans 23-14, right, Sean? But you know what play I'm finna talk, you know what call, and you know what play I'm finna bring up before we even get to the game. This man, Patrick Mahomes, runs. It's clearly had a chance to go out of bounds, Sean. Don't go out of bounds. Two Texas players run into each other, not hit them. I get live looking at it. It looked like they clocked them. Run into each other. They get the flag for that. Mahomes consistently does this, and the NFL needs to look to change this rule. And I'm not mad at Mahomes for taking advantage of the rule, but if you have a chance to run out of bounds, run out of bounds. But Mahomes consistently does that, the fake like he run out of bounds, this sneak and get an extra couple yards. After that, he's a free runner. I don't care if he's a quarterback or not. He should get his head knocked off. And that should not have been a flag. They should have pulled that flag up. I'm tired of the NFL with this, Sean. I'm tired of it. It irritates me even more because it's Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs doing it, and Mahomes takes advantage of it every time. But that was one of the worst calls I've ever seen. Worst call I ever seen. They didn't even touch him, Sean, and he got the call. But what was your reaction to this game? So it was the game when I also brought up that Travis Kelce was going to have to go off within a win, which he clearly did. He looked like vintage Travis Kelce. But what was your reaction to this game? I wasn't shocked. I was just more disappointed with that call.
I think the officiating in that game, and I will even say in the Ravens-Bills game, there were a couple calls in that game that I thought were horrendous. But this is going to continue to be an issue every year in terms of officiating. Separate conversation. Let me answer your question, SB. I think the NFL has to take a long look at a couple of things this offseason. Number one, the quarterback slide rule cannot just be to protect quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. It has to protect defenders as well. Mm-hmm. You have to give yourself up in enough time because when a defender is flying at you at full speed, if you give yourself up at the last minute and you get hit, I think, and again, we talked about the Trevor Lawrence play, you know, from, you know, several weeks ago, ironically against the Texans. Mm-hmm. My big issue with the call wasn't that they were officiating the play, they were officiating the outcome. The outcome being Trevor Lawrence had got a concussion and obviously ended up season ending and Alshire gets suspended for 3 games. Mm-hmm. It's incumbent upon the quarterbacks to get down or to show they're going to get down early enough that you are protecting the defenders from these quote unquote vicious looking hits. Which I think that's the other part of it for me. The look is often being officiated, not what is actually happening. So mm-hmm. Here's the other side of the coin for me. Should those plays be reviewable?
Yes.
They should be reviewable. But I understand that you don't necessarily want to slow the game down with a bunch of reviews or reviewing everything. It's those specific plays in particular that I think need to be reviewable. And I think especially in the playoffs when it's one and done, They absolutely need to be reviewed. But, you know, this is going to – they're going to have the competition committee, I hope, has some serious conversations about this offseason because it's been a problem. And, again, I understand we want to protect quarterbacks. Quarterbacks are the names and the money makers and the guys and okay, fine, the marketing, you know, geniuses at the NFL offices said, hey, we're going to, you know, make this a quarterback-driven league, and so that's fine. But the other side is protect your players. And you've done everything in your power to protect quarterbacks, but quarterbacks have the responsibility for me in protecting defenders from flying at them. So give yourself up sooner than later, because if you give yourself up later and you get hit, I don't have any – I'm not going to get upset for you. That's a choice, especially if, you know, you can feel and you know a guy's coming at you. That's a massive issue. They have to do something about that. But I do think there needs to be something in place where New York or an official up in the box, up in the sky, is reviewing these plays and telling these guys on the field, hey, that's a clean football play. In live action, when you're on the field and you see it, again, because it's so fast and it happens really fast on the field, it may not always be the easiest thing to see. So what can we do to help those guys on the field be better about that? That has to be looked at. But, again, I think it starts with quarterbacks saying, hey, I got to get down. I'm going to get down earlier because I want to win the game, but I can't put that defender in a bad position because, again, I didn't think it was fair for Al Shire to be suspended for as long as he was. You know, maybe one game. I don't know. I'm not going to get into that. But the point is that I didn't think it was fair. So, for me, again, you know, figure out a way to protect these guys.
No, they, because I feel like anytime the NFL make rules and changes, it's always one-sided, and mainly for the quarterbacks, but always offense. Always offense. Offense get all the benefits of any rule change. The defenders can get hurt too because now they don't know how to tackle or when they can hit somebody or when they do something properly. Now dive at somebody wrong or cut the wrong way because now, I would just go straight forward, but now I got to slow my momentum down and do something. Now what if his foot get stuck in the turf or the grass wrong way, tweak an ankle, tweak an Achilles, you know, knock on wood, I don't want anybody to get hurt. But the NFL has to do a job protecting defenders too. The people hitting people need to be protected too, which sounds crazy. But the people who are also hitting people need to be protected too. It looks even worse because it's the Chiefs doing it, and Mahomes clearly knows what he's doing because how he goes about it, he clearly taking advantage of the rule. And, you know, even the great Tom Brady took advantage of the rule book. So I'm not even mad that he's doing it. Just the NFL just has to do better. They have to do better. So the next game on the list was the Eagles versus the Rams. And Sean, Saquon Barkley does it again. Eagles win 28-22. The game started off. We talked about another team too about the running back and playing in these cold weathers. But the game started off, it was clear, but it's cold. The game ended with snow on the field. And when it's snow on the field in bad conditions, the best thing to do is give it to your bell cow, give it to your back, and let him do his thing. Saquon Barkley, 26 carries, 205 yards, two TDs, and he had, I believe it was like a 78-yard run, or it was like 60-plus yard run. He had two big runs in his game. What's your reaction to the game? But also, is Saquon Barkley the most impactful first-year free agent to a team ever of all time? Like, how big has Saquon Barkley been for the Eagles? I know the Giants fans are still sick.
Good. I would say a couple things. One, you know, when the weather – because that was a game where the weather started out clear, but they knew that snow was going to be coming during the game. I thought the Eagles did a great job of being prepared for it, maybe more so than the Rams. But that game to me came down to a couple things. One, you know, how you manage the game. I thought the Eagles offensively did a good job of managing the game, not trying to necessarily win the game in the first or second quarter. Mm-hmm. So shout out to them. Saquon obviously played a big role in that. But I thought, you know, Jalen Hurts did a very good job, you know, doing his job. The stats won't wow you, and that's not because yesterday wasn't about stats. Yesterday was about here's what we think we have to do to beat this team, and they did it. But I want to also point out, you mentioned Saquon, Jalen Carter, and I texted a buddy of mine who's a diehard Eagles fan, been Eagles fan his entire life. I asked him, I said, is Jalen Carter the best young Eagles defensive tackle since Jerome Brown? And, you know, I'm going to say this as a native of Central Florida, both Jerome Brown and Jalen Carter are both from Central Florida, from the Orlando area.
Something in the water.
You know, but I just say that, you know, he is such a game changer, such a game wrecker.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's on the field for basically 98% of their snaps defensively, mm-hmm. he is an absolute game wrecker. And, and he said, yeah, you know what? I think he is.
He's nice.
He is really good. And nothing against Fletcher Cox, because Fletcher Cox is great, maybe in the Hall of Fame consideration when his mm-hmm. time is due. But Jalen Carter is an absolute. He had a
stay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that play he had on Stafford late in the game was super, super key, because they've been doubling him, you know, most of the game. And also he forced the fumble on Kyren Williams, you know. So, you know, to me, he needs as much praise as we're giving Saquon. I think, you know, Jalen Carter and Zach Bond, their linebacker, deserve a lot of praise for how they played yesterday, because they were huge in that win.
Yeah, now that was a big win, and we go preview the other matchups Friday, too, for the upcoming match, because it's getting real shaky. But Sean, one more game on the list, the game of the night, the shocker game, came down to the wire, 27-25, 2-point conversion, Ravens go for it, Mark Andrews dropped the game. Tying 2-point conversion. He dropped it. And I'm trying to go in a way. I hope I can find it again, because I want to show you, like, before the game, they was like praising Mark Andrews, which was just like, football is the only sport where like karma sees the like come to play. And it's, I wanted to see, did you see this on the Ravens Twitter page? I found it. Right here. I want to share this. I want you to see this. Mm-hmm. I was dying laughing at the comments, by the way. The comments was crazy. Baltimore Ravens X or Twitter right before the game. A little snow does not bother Mark Andrews. Some of these jokes, Sean, they write themselves, dog. They write that football is a sport where you don't want the karma to hit you. Dan Campbell told the Vikings head coach, I will see you in 2 weeks. He was talking about Cancun. You don't want to talk early in football, which this is just a simple post, which I understand you trying to get ready. Tiffany said, I still support Mark. Tiffany, you be killing Harbaugh all the time, but you still want to support Mark. But there's no way you should drop that, though, Sean. But if you go through these comments, look, they got him AI with Diddy putting oil on his hands. They talk about you notice Dave Chappelle was like, he's clearly lying when he say he's in a haunted video taken before a disaster. This one is a hilarious show. I was like, bro, y'all gotta chill. Oh my god, bro. But it Mark Andrews, besides, but that was funny. I was going through, y'all gotta check the conversations out on that one. Definitely time for a little clean, and not gonna lie, yeah, it might have to. But Mark Andrews did not have the best night that night,
right?
But I would be not telling the truth if I just leave it simple minded and just tell you Mark Andrews is the reason why they lost. At the end of the day, you got to make that catch. Yes, 100%. If you go, you got to catch the ball. And it's not the first time Mark Andrews dropped 2-point conversion, so I don't understand why Harbaugh would keep going back to him. It's been multiple occasions where he like, don't make the play on two-point conversions. Go to somebody else. You got other options. But also, Sean, the option that you could have got or went to for, you got Derrick Henry. Give him the ball. It's snowing. It's no way. And then that's why I was like, you looked at Saquon Barkley carries compared to Derrick Henry carries. Derrick Henry only had 16 carries. It's snowing outside. If you don't give this man the ball and control the game, the real reason why the Ravens lost is turnovers, slow start. First half, they was atrocious. Second half, they was a totally different team. And to me, they didn't get Derrick Henry the ball enough. That two-point conversion, I'm tush-pushing, Sean. We pushing, and Derrick Henry going to be right up front. We going to get in there. We're going to hand the ball off to Derrick Henry. We get in there, Sean. You got to. I don't. It's not that they can say you give Derrick Henry the ball. This is the game, Sean. Derrick Henry will at least have 20 plus carries.
Again, I think you got to. So, and this is where I'm going to defend the Ravens here. I don't think early in the game they obviously tried to establish Derrick Henry, right? Yes. And Buffalo, to their credit, came down. They didn't stay in their shell coverage like they normally do. They came down and they were very intentional and trying to limit Derrick Henry early in the game. In the second half, beginning of the second half, again, I think the Ravens did come out with a little more intention of, hey, we're gonna line up, we're gonna smash this team. So it wasn't just Derrick Henry, it was also Hill as well getting some carries and gashing them for, you know, 9-10 yards here and there.
Yep.
The game came down to, again, as you mentioned, SB, the self-inflicted wounds by the Ravens. That interception by Lamar was a non-factor. Ultimately, you know, the Bills didn't score any points off of that. The fumble was probably the bigger mistake. Yes. You know, Lamar trying to pick it up. It's a wet ball, I'm assuming, and trying to do something with it after a bad snap by Lindenbaum, which I think, you know, again, that threw off the timing some. But, again, Lamar – is never going to throw a teammate under the bus. That's not who he is at all, which I love about him. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you know, if you had to do that again, you know, you may just fall on it. But Lamar is someone who's kind of used to, if something like that happens, he'll figure out a way. But the conditions will probably say, no, that's one you just got to fall on. It's a learning moment. You know, you live with it. The Mark Andrews fumble again. They were driving. It looked like they were getting ready to probably score some points. Mm-hmm. You know, he has the fumble on the catch and run that, you know, obviously Buffalo is able to recover. And then everybody's going to look at the drop, the two-point conversion. But also, they missed the two-point conversion earlier in the game. So they found themselves in a position where they had to, where they were kind of chasing points, so to speak, as I like to call it. I just thought the game came down to the mistakes. And, you know, and certainly, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Buffalo. Buffalo did their job. They found a way to win the game. But I have to believe that if you play that game again, that Baltimore probably wins that game. Obviously, that's not how it works. We know that. And, you know, shout out to Buffalo for, you know, getting a big win at home. And, you know, these are three of the four teams that lost the turnover battle badly.
Yep.
Right. The Rams lost it badly.
The Lions
lost it badly. And obviously the Ravens lost it badly. And so that to me was the difference this weekend. The only team that didn't turn the ball over that lost and actually outgained their opponent was Houston. So, you know,
that magic, man.
A little bit of an anomaly game. But, you know, that said, Mark Andrews has been one of the best tight ends in the NFL for a very long time. He's been Lamar's safety blanket for a very long time. You know, so I think, you know, let's not lose our minds over, you know, Mark Andrews and this particular mistake. You know, at the end of the day, he, you know, he and Lamar came in together, right? I don't think they're the longest tenure Ravens, but they've been there, you know, as long as, you know, probably anybody on that roster, maybe. And I'm gonna say maybe, very, very much maybe. You know, there's going to be some changes because that's just the nature of it. There's changes every year. But I don't think, again, this is not the time to lose your mind. And again, for me, they didn't lose that game yesterday because of coaching. They lost that game yesterday because of self-inflicted wounds that happened on the field.
Yeah.
And again, to your point about Derrick Henry, again, maybe the stats show, yeah, get a ball to Derrick Henry 20 times, you know, you win. Mm. But I just thought there were points in the game where, particularly in the fourth quarter, where they couldn't exactly do that. Mm-hmm. And also, let's also, and I want to give some credit here, Zay Flowers did not play yesterday.
Yep,
did not play in the playoffs at all. And then Rashad Bateman goes out, and they have to drive almost 90 yards to score that touchdown that puts them in a position to go for two without their two best receivers. So you saw the Lamar magic. You saw the magic from the Ravens yesterday. And also, let's not forget, Derrick Henry had a drop on a wide-open pass early in the game too, that if he catches it, he's probably still running. So, you know, there were just some miscues and mistakes that I think ultimately cost them the game. But I'm not going to – but again, don't lose your mind. Yeah. There's some things that got to be fixed, obviously. But, you know, I think it's going to come down to, you know, them owning this and saying, okay, we can't do this to ourselves again.
And that's what concerns me about, like, the Bills advancing to the next round. That, like, the Ravens – let's be real. The Ravens played atrocious and was a two-point conversion away from winning. Because I believe if they tie that game – and it goes overtime, I got Baltimore winning. I think Baltimore would have sealed that deal. So, and this would concern me with the Bills going into the next round. Like, hey, you played against Baltimore Ravens. Two of their top receivers are gone. They turned the ball over handedly, and y'all still only won by two.
Right.
And y'all got to come play the Chiefs. And, like, that concerns me a little bit. But also, Sean, remember that question I asked? Tiffany, why you hate John so bad? Tiffany want to get rid of John so bad.
We'll take him in New Orleans.
Yeah, but he trusts he's going to get a job quick. But, Sean, remember I asked you a question, right? I want to see what your response is. I asked you about this game. I said, do the outcome of this game will affect how people feel about who they voted for MVP? I think I said it different. I don't know, or impact. Mm-hmm. You know, remember the question I asked you?
Yes.
And the reason why I ask is because I feel like Lamar's going to win MVP, but I would be remiss if I wasn't concerned about Buffalo weather and they're playing a part in the game and the Ravens losing. So now knowing the outcome of the question and why I asked that question, did this game have any effect on the MVP?
No. Okay. Not at all. It's a regular season award. We know what Lamar did in the regular season. Mm-hmm. And again, for me, the thing that was most impressive yesterday in a loss, and I know it was a loss, and obviously that's going to be the bottom line for people, was after the mistakes early on, Lamar was very sharp after that. And in the second half, he was on his game. He was dealing, you know, so, and he was dealing mostly from the pocket, you know, so.
Yeah, he in love with the pocket now. I ain't gonna lie. He in love with the pocket.
So, you know, again, I think, again, it was just the thing about the game. And, again, the two things that stood out for me were the mistakes and the missed opportunities. One thing I did think impact the game. And, again, while I will never say one play or one call impacted the game, there was a pass interference penalty late in the first half that was egregious. It was not pass interference. Keon Coleman and the DB 25, I can't remember 25's name right off the top of my head. My apologies. But they literally were hand fighting down the field. Mm-hmm. Keon Coleman pushes off. 25 falls back, and they call pass interference on 25, which basically put Buffalo in range to score before the half. You know, so those type of things, again, I think those things should be reviewable. Because it was very, and there were other officials. I went online just to see if I was, you know, reading it wrong, and there were other officials who said, "No, that you picked that flag up, pick that flag up because again, that's literally not a penalty." And again, I think at the end of the day, for me, it's those type moments that you wish, you know, could be officiated differently. But again, bottom line, Buffalo found a way to win. They're moving on to the AFC Championship game. And, you know, we'll talk about it on Friday and more in depth. But we're looking forward to a good championship weekend next Sunday. And let's see what happens.
Wait, let's see what happens. Salute to that man in the chat. I know he happy his Eagles flying. Yes, make sure y'all hit that like, share. And then also subscribe if you haven't subscribed to the channel already. Another day, Sean. And Scottie Pippen is back in the news again. Scottie Pippen did an interview, and it's getting to a point where I don't even care too much about like the interview, but I'm gonna say one thing he did say in an interview where he was like he excluded Michael Jordan and LeBron names from when he talked about it in a GOAT NBA GOAT conversation, which is wild. Now, if he would have said, and I have even attested to this, it's getting to a point that LeBron James and Michael Jordan, the GOAT debate between them two, has ruined basketball, ruined how people view basketball, ruined how people look at how people career successful or not. It ruined people mindsets of think how they think basketball supposed to be and how player career supposed to be. If he was going at that point, I would have been cool. But I'm tired of the point with Scotty. It was just seemed like everywhere he go now, he just on a Michael Jordan slander tour. Is it? I don't know if it's because he don't feel that he's getting a much respect that he deserve as a player from his career, which I think during the 90s he didn't. But in this generation, this era, I think Scottie Pippen get way more love than he probably did back in the day. I don't know what it could be though, Sean. That like. Every time he goes anywhere, he has to say something bad about Mike. I guarantee you probably look up Scottie last five interviews. And if I'm wrong, please somebody tell me if I'm wrong. I guarantee probably his last five interviews, all five of them, he probably said one thing slandering Mike. Now he throwing LeBron in it with the GOAT debate thing. Scottie, stop it, man. You have to stop it, Scottie. You don't want to ruin your legacy. Please don't ruin your legacy, Scottie. But Sean, what do you think it is? I don't know no more. I'm really confused on the point of this now.
It's really hard to say. I mean, I think some of it obviously stems back to the fact that Scottie wasn't very happy about The Last Dance and the portrayal of The Last Dance. I remember, and I'll say this real quick because I don't want to spend a lot of time on this point. I remember when I heard about The Last Dance, I was like, oh, they're gonna do a documentary on the Bulls. Like, this is gonna be great, you know, the 90s mm-hmm. Bulls, and you know, what a time to be alive and actually watch it and see it. Mm-hmm. But the more you got into The Last Dance, the more you realized it was really Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, David Ruffin and the Temptations, you know.
Right, yeah. albeit, you know, Eddie Kendrick did sing a lot of lead for the Temptations, but I think the point is that, you know, when you were a part of a team, and again, that team didn't win before Scottie Pippen got there, and Scottie Pippen became the player and the all-star and the star player that he became.
Two-way beast. Scottie was a two-way beast.
And there were a lot of people who would say that Scottie Pippen is the best Robin in the history of basketball.
Yeah.
I
it's debatable.
I won't argue that point. When you say Robin, I'm saying someone who's been a Robin the majority of their career and did it well, the way they needed to do it for the team to ultimately be successful. Not going to argue that point. But I do think, again, some of it is that, and I think some of it is just, you know, a lot of these – you and I have never had a GOAT debate on this platform, and we never will because I will not engage. But most mostly I think it stems from just, you know, him truly feeling like he never got his just due, whether from Jordan or from others. Now, again, I will, to defend Jordan, I will say Jordan did say in his Hall of Fame speech, I think Scottie Pippen was the only teammate he mentioned by name.
Mm-hmm.
He
always praised Scottie and said, I couldn't have won without Scottie, and I never won without Scottie.
Right.
Always said that. It's on wax on multiple occasions.
Right. Now, But the portrayal of Scotty in The Last Dance, particularly what happened those seasons when Jordan wasn't there.
My only problem is this, though, Sean. Did they lie, though? Did they just literally said what happened? And, well, he talked about it.
Well, yeah.
While he did it.
Yeah, so no, listen. No, listen. I mean, again, listen. I think he's mad because it was portrayed the way it was in order to show the greatness of Michael Jordan, that this is what they couldn't do without me, and this is what Scottie couldn't do without me. And, you know, and again, I'm speaking from Scottie's perspective, right. Not my perspective. I'm speaking from how Scottie may have perceived it. So, again.
And then he begged for Jordan to come back. He put the shoes all in the camera. He was begging for Jordan to come back just like everybody else.
Yeah, different time, different, you know. And again, at that point, it was already decided Jordan was coming back. It wasn't even him begging. It was already decided Jordan was coming back. It was just, you know, it was prime marketing. It was, you know, I don't want to say it was pre-trolling before trolling, but it was pre-trolling before trolling. So, you know, I just think, you know, I understand Scottie Pippen's point. I wish it would kind of stop. For me, two grown men, you know, there are a lot of grown men who put on that team. If you have issue with what happened in The Last Dance and Michael, get in the room, have a conversation. If you, you know, you don't have to agree to be aligned, but just be aligned on the fact that, hey, listen, we accomplished something great during that, in those 6 out of 8 years. And, you know, let's just move forward. But the kind of sniping, and which is one-sided because Jordan doesn't say anything. He doesn't do interviews like that. He doesn't talk. He's not on social media. I wish it would stop because, again, at the end of the day, it takes away some from people really viewing what they did as a group. And I think that's the other part. It's a group who does it. Jordan was the leader and the face and the first one there, but it's a group who did that. You know, and Scotty and Phil and Dennis and, you know, Horace and anybody else involved, if they have feelings about it, just get in the room and have a conversation and be done with it. Like, it's just silliness at this point.
No, I have agreed. It's definitely getting silly at this point. Scotty got to lock in. He got to lock in. Sean, I'm going to take the lead on this one. We got to talk about some baseball. We got some baseball today, guys. The 2025 Baseball Hall of Fame preview. What we got for this Baseball Hall of Fame, Sean?
So quite a few guys up. First time on the ballots up. The announcement should come tomorrow sometime, late in the afternoon, late in the evening. The two guys who we think probably are locks to get in, obviously, CC Sabathia, long-time pitcher, starting pitcher, one of the best left-handed pitchers ever, I think. But really kind of a really kind of a throwback.
Miss you, CC. Guy. Miss you, dog.
Yeah, you know, CC was he was like that, Jesus, and like that, and you know, big man, but you know, bigger heart when it came to, you know, going on the mound and eating up innings, and, you know, again, bit of a throwback. One of the last, I think he's the last one to throw for 3K strikeouts, which, again, I don't know if we'll see that in this new age of baseball, how pitchers are deployed. Won 250 games, won an MVP in the ALCS with the Yankees, won a Cy Young Award, won a World Series, led the league and wins twice, you know. So, you know, I gotta think, you know, definitely he's gonna be a lock. And then the other one is Ichiro Suzuki. Ichiro, you know, a lot of people think about Ichiro. Ichiro is a unique player because he came over to the MLB at 27. So, you know, when you talk about, you know, his abilities, I mean, he was he was a hit monster. You know, I mean, and again, you talk about the hit record, all-time hits record. Pete Rose has the all-time hits record, 4,256. If Ichiro comes over in his, you know, his younger years, he got over 3,000 hits in MLB. You know, you're talking about, you know, 6-7 years that he didn't play in MLB. He could have broken that record.
Yeah, I would say he could have broke that record. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, just that consistent. But he was a 10-time All-Star. He won an AL MVP. He was Rookie of the Year. Matter of fact, he won AL MVP and Rookie of the Year in the same season. You know, so was a very good defender, 10-time Gold Glove. You know, led the league in stolen bases his rookie year. Like he was, and also you just talk about the influence of just the Japanese player who came, you know, after him, the Matsuis. We talk about Shohei, guys like that. He was as big a part of that as anybody. So, and the big question is whether or not he will be first ballot, or not, whether or not he'll get in. The question will be whether or not he'll be getting in unanimously by voters. And so, you know, so those are the two big guys. But there's some other guys on the list, but those are the two guys that we expect will be named Hall of Famers tomorrow.
We got to wait and see when, especially when this list drops. Sean, at the time of this recording, the score is right now 7-0. We're just, since we can't really get too much of depth on it because the game already going on, so we can just leave it as a pick. National championship game going on right now. Notre Dame up 7-0. We're going against Ohio State. Who is your pick?
Picking Notre Dame to win. Yeah, picking Notre Dame to win. Shout out. And again, chance to make history. No black head coach has ever won the college football national championship. So chance for Marcus Freeman to make history. So looking forward to that. So picking Notre Dame.
That'll be big if he put it off. My heart want to pick Notre Dame, but for some reason, like Ohio State been hot ever since they like the media was trashing their coach and they just like locked in. I want to pick Notre Dame, but I think Ohio State might come through and get this done. But we have to wait and see. But either way, I threw the horse in the race, but I just see them winning. But episode 36, Sean, who you got?
In the spirit of Notre Dame, going with Jerome Bettis, the bus.
Ooh, yeah, wow. The bus.
The wheels on the bus go round and round. So Jerome Bettis.
I like the bus. Jerome Bettis, dang, that's a pick right there. That was a good pick. I'm not gonna lie, the bus, Jerome Bettis. He won 36.
He won 36 in Pittsburgh.
Oh yeah, dog. I would say Shaq was trash. Since in love for the Eagles, since the Eagles had won, just since my boy Tad was in the chat, I'm going to go Brian Westbrook.
Brian Westbrook is a good pick. Brian Westbrook is a good pick. Also, Leroy Butler, long-time Packer. Yeah, Leroy Butler. Yep, that'd be another one.
Okay, yeah, I'm trying to see NBA, but yeah, no, I really ain't no good players in the NBA that were war. Oh, no, I'm tripping. Rasheed Wallace. Of course. Rasheed. I don't have to think about it. Rico Rasheed and Brian Wins, but that's a good one.
Yeah.
But appreciate you guys for watching another great episode of Real Takes Over Fake the Base with SB and Sean. And we're going to see you guys on Friday. National Championship Preview. Peace. We are out of here. Real Takes Over Fake the